This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 471, recorded on Wednesday, November 16th, 2016. Show about technology ministry. We do it each and every week. We try and keep it under an hour, and we try and say some useful things and provide some useful resources. Much of the brains behind the operation is on the other side of the camera there I almost said Sleepy Eye. How many years has that been? New Ulm, Minnesota, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally.
Maybe I have sleepy eyes this morning. We're not used to doing morning podcasts. Good morning, Martin.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I had some hymnal committee responsibilities on Monday and Tuesday, so we had to push our recording to Wednesday. So I was commenting before we clicked the broadcast button that it almost seems like forever since the last time we did this, because we recorded early last week and we actually did it in person. You were able to visit, and we looked at the new Welcome Center, and that was a lot of fun.
It was. I was so happy to be there and happy to be back home and happy for today's show, because it's one of those tab-palooza kind of days where I have not one, but 27 tabs opened in my browser, and I'm eager to share lots of great community feedback that we have today.
Does the browser tell you how many tabs you have open, or did you actually count?
I counted, oh, yeah.
There's probably an extension that you could get.
It'll tell you, yeah.
27 sounds excessive, but that's probably not even the record. So
no, maybe not.
A lot of tabs means a lot of community feedback, and that's the point of the show, where we take feedback from whatever source, whatever channel, whether it's Twitter, Pinterest, Facebook, email, Digo, Google+, all over the place, and we're going to talk a little bit about it. We store it up for the most part, and we share it on this show. So first of all, thanks for everybody who did share, and just an encouragement to those who didn't or haven't in the past. It's really easy to do, and we'll talk a little bit more about how to do that at the end of the show. But it's something that both Sally and I really welcome. It's helpful for us. It's a learning experience for us, because many of the things that are shared we've not encountered, and it's great to have some of that come our way just from your helpful feedback. So continue to do that, or consider to do that going forward. Where do we start this week, Sally, with community feedback?
Well, I thought it might be wise to start with our very own Wells Tech show notes blog. So for those that aren't familiar, you can get Wells Tech in a variety of ways. And one thing that we've done for 470 shows so far, we'll be adding another post today, is the Wells Tech blog, which is basically where we archive all the links and things that we talk about in the show. Yep. And you do have the ability right there in the show notes to comment on the shows. And a couple of people commented on our most recent show, Martin. It was about using Twitter for ministry. And we heard first from Rachel Pearson, who said, "We're getting started on a regular monthly Twitter chat for Wells educators." This is something that Rachel's coordinated in the past, and she is starting it up for this school year. The next chat is scheduled for November 16th. How about that? That's this evening at 8 p.m. Central. So if you're watching the podcast on the day we record, make sure and jump into the chat tonight at 8 p.m. Central. They use the hashtag WellsEd, and the easiest way to participate is with a site called participate.com, one I hadn't been familiar with.
Yeah, I was interested to see what that did. Yeah, it's actually very useful for this kind of thing.
Right. So you can actually see past chats. You can look at transcripts of them. And then as the chat is going on, you can follow the chat easily here on participate.com with that hashtag WellsEd.
And kind of the benefit of that, rather than just kind of using good old Twitter where you just do a search on the hashtag, is it's almost kind of a threaded discussion where it kind of weeds out all the other stuff and just focuses on that hashtag. So that's a very cool technology.
Definitely. So even if you don't necessarily have education things to contribute to their conversation, maybe tonight is a good time for you to join using Participate and just see how it works. You might be able to extend that concept to some of your other ministry applications.
Yeah, create your own, for sure.
Exactly. So, and we also heard from Leslie Bergerman. Leslie's a frequent contributor to Wells Tech, a member of Good Shepherds in West Allis, Wisconsin. And she said, if you had used the site Twitter feed for automated posting of RSS feeds to Twitter or Facebook, they closed down, she says, without warning. Don't you hate it when that happens?
That's
as
the
of
the internet.
Mm-hmm. The end of last month, October 31st. But Leslie has an alternate opportunity for you to take advantage of. It's called Deliverit, DLVR.IT. And again, more social media automation. She's tried it out and she likes the way it performs. She pointed us to their Twitter page, Good_Shepherds on Twitter. And if you're looking to follow a congregation that makes use of their Twitter feed quite extensively,
nice
posting
job.
Sermons yep. and Bible verses and all kinds of things, and using Deliverit to make it all happen, check out Good_Shepherds. Thanks, Leslie, for those comments.
Very nice. Yeah, nicely done on the Twitter page. I like the images that they use and the frequency with which they post, and I'm sure that is in no small part to the tools that Leslie uncovers, like Deliverit. So.
Mm-hmm. Next up, we heard from a good old long-term Wells Tech tweeter, and that would be you, Mr. Spriggs. You were sharing some information about USB chargers.
Yeah, it's all the rage these days is USB-C chargers in particular. If you've been following the new releases from the Mac and even many Android phones, they've done away with some of these other standards, so to speak, USB standards, and really are beginning to settle on USB-C the USB-C standard. The only problem is it's a little early in the cycle, so there's not a lot out there, and you have to be kind of careful which ones do what. So you have to kind of read carefully, and these kinds of articles are really helpful because they tell you which are the best chargers, which ones are safe for your devices, and which ones are dangerous because if you select the wrong one, it could make your device either die, just kind of brick out, or get dangerously warm. And we know what happens when batteries get really, really warm. So this is a great article from, and I'm not too familiar with the site, actually makeuseof.com is a fairly popular site, although I don't frequent it. I just kind of stumbled across this. I think somebody on Twitter shared this with me. But they talk about some of the charging problems, why they are an issue. They talk about quick charging or turbo charging. Then kind of go through the safe bets. And there aren't a lot of them out there at this point. As I mentioned, it's a new standard. So good article if you've got one of those devices and you want maybe additional power or a car charger or some kind of charging base station where you can plug other things in, this is a great article to take a look at.
Very cool stuff, and actually keeping you from being too warm. So you want to stay cool and not be too warm and have a fire in your pocket, potentially.
Right.
Yeah, so good stuff. All right, next up we had an email from our friend Gail Potratz, who teaches at Emmanuel in New London, Wisconsin. And Gail shared a nice Google Docs trick that I wasn't familiar with. So you know that Google Docs, or Google Drive, I should say, can host all different file types. So you certainly can easily create word processing documents using the Google Docs tool, but you can upload all different file types as file storage or for easily sharing the file, things like that. One thing in particular you can upload are PDF documents. And what Gail shared was a little trick I wasn't familiar with, but once you have a PDF document uploaded to your Google Drive, you can right-click, say open with, and there's an option to open your PDF document with Google Docs. And the PDF file will be converted to a text editable file in Google Docs. And actually, you can take that Google Doc and send it to Microsoft Word even. So you can download a Microsoft Word version of it. So if you're trying to crack open a PDF document, that's a great trick that Gail shared that you can do with Google Docs.
Yeah, I'm going to try. I've not tried that. Thank you, Gail, for sharing that. One of the issues with kind of cut and paste I've found with PDFs, because sometimes you want to push this into obviously other formats, is the line breaks, which is really kind of a challenge. So you'll do a cut and paste of a paragraph, but then you got to manually go in and get all the line breaks out of there so it flows correctly. So maybe this is a solution for that kind of thing. So impressive.
Definitely. Yep. Give it a try. All right. We are moving on to Digo Shares. And Digo is a social bookmarking tool where you can save links to things and make comments on them. And we actually have a Wells Tech group there that you can save links and everyone in the group can access them easily. So via Digo, we heard from Rachel Pearson, and Rachel shared a link to something called CoSpaces at CoSpaces.io. And it's basically a 3D design tool that you can make things using the web-based tool and save them into the library, and then you can get them on your smartphone and view them through a virtual reality viewer, like a Google Cardboard kind of thing. I just installed it on my iPhone here, and I just loaded up a sandbox. It looks like a big, huge sandcastle. And when you press the button for Google Cardboard, then it takes it and it puts it in that double vision kind of view, and it allows you to walk around inside the sandcastle. So you take your smartphone, you put it in your little $10 cardboard virtual reality viewer, and here I am walking around in the sandcastle. So this is just taking that virtual reality and allowing anyone to design and be able to view things in 3D using virtual reality. You can also go to them via the website and view them in traditional, more 2D. But with this walk around kind of approach, it's really exciting and I think very creative for STEM type classes to be able to experience your own virtual reality creation. Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, it looks nicely done, too. A lot of investment in here, and I think educators especially would find this useful.
Definitely. All right, someone else we know shared a Digo link. That would be yours truly. And I shared a link to Tech for the Holidays from Church Tech Today. So we all know that the holiday season in a ministry setting is a very busy season and lots of things to do, special services to prepare for and such. And Tech for the Holidays gives you 5 ways to prepare your tech team. Learn to let go, listen, cross-training cooperation, don't react, respond, and remember the reason for the season and the birth of our Savior. So some good tips here. Probably just a 5-minute read for you if you're in charge of tech in your congregation. Maybe we'll strike a chord with you and give you a few good reminders of how to get through the season stress-free, hopefully.
Yeah, that's the challenge. Technology in and of itself creates pressure and stress, especially if you are in charge of it for a service or an event of some sort, whether you're live streaming, recording, managing the audio board, putting up web pages, et cetera, all kinds of deadlines, along with all the other stuff. So, it's important that the season does not slip by and its purpose slip by without you participating in it.
So, all right.
Good find.
Yep. Shifting gears now, we're going to take a look at a few Google Plus communities, actually. There are Wells-centric Google Plus communities for those that are using Google Apps or Chromebooks in their schools, and also one for those using Office 365, the Microsoft suite, in an education setting. And so a few shares of note from those groups, first from the Google Plus community, the Google Wells Google Schools community, I should say. Jason Schmidt shared a link to something called GMath, and he says, you need to check out GMath, great add-on that allows you to dictate your math equations and add them to sheets, docs, and forms. And so I did take a look. It's at texthelp.com, and it's one of their products. It's called GMath. It says create rich math equations, graphs, and more in Google Docs, Sheets, and Forms. It's a free add-on, and I would think math teachers, if you haven't rushed to your computers yet to get this installed, now would be the time. So, and especially when Jason gives it this strong support, you need to check it out, he says. And we know that Jason vets a lot of different things in his role as a tech coordinator for Bennington ISD, and respect his opinion on such things. So check it out. Next up, from Drew Willems, who's over at Lakeside Lutheran High School, he made mention of the fact that Google Sites is being redesigned and released this month, rapid release on November 9th, and released to the rest of the world by November 21st. And we'll have a link in the show notes to an article about all the updates. I think Sites is one of the tools that has been sorely lacking for attention. A powerful tool, but design-wise, you seem pretty locked in with it. And so I'm excited to see. I think it's going to be more of a widget-based, kind of drag and drop different boxes and things, a lot more flexibility with your layouts and your designs as you get the new Google Sites installed. So definitely a great way to build education websites or work websites. I think there's lots of opportunity here with Google Sites, and it's a free platform. You can add your own domain name for a very low price, but you can host it right there for free. So check out the new improved Google Sites, part of the G Suite, formerly known as Google Apps.
Right, and I think the ease of use is a big win. My little perusing of the article also talked about mobile friendliness, so they've taken mm-hmm. some steps there. And I think they're in stiff competition with things like WordPress, where you can get a website up in very little time, as long as you're happy with kind of that blog format and some of the tooling that's around that very powerful platform. But if you're already in the Google space, it's nice to have a tool that you can get a website up really quickly, and that's the whole point here.
Absolutely, especially if you're in a, you know, a shielded community like a Google Apps for Education, right, where you can have your students creating sites and sharing just within your Google Apps
umbrella, I guess is a good word. Wiki opportunities here. We haven't spent a lot of time looking at that lately, but that's built on Google Sites.
Very true. All right, one more from the Wells Google School community. This is from Professor James Karlofsky, who's at Martin Luther College, and he shared a Google Forms hint from our friends at Better Cloud Monitor. I follow Better Cloud Monitor. It used to be called the Google Guru, but they kind of merged into Better Cloud Monitor, and they always have great tips. Google Forms is now predicting question types and suggesting answers, so just making your work of creating a form quicker and easier. So they give a couple of examples in the article. For instance, if you asked a question or started typing out a question, what day of the week would you like to have? It will suggest the days of the week, Monday through Sunday, it has listed here. And you can just click a button, and rather than having to type out each of those individual mm-hmm. options, it'll add it automatically. Or do you want our new staff meeting in the AM? It'll suggest yes and no options for you. In addition, if you type a question something like on a scale of 1 to 5, it'll automatically switch your question type to a linear scale. So not just predicting what answers you want, but also predicting the most appropriate question types for the questions that you're asking. So just relax and enjoy it is kind of the clue here, because it just does this work for you. If you don't want what they suggest, then change it. It's not a problem or difficult to do, but it does kind of move you forward a lot quicker in your form development if they're helping you fill in the blanks.
Some of that machine learning that Google is now famous for put to work. Mm-hmm. So making our lives a little bit easier, especially those people that use a lot of forms.
definitely. All right. And then one from our Wells Google School community. This time, Rachel Pearson shared there that she had tried Office Lens on her iPhone for the first time and was pretty impressed with the quality of the scan. No more running to the copy machine when I need to digitize something. So Office Lens has been out for a while, probably a little over a year. And it basically allows you to use your phone as a scanner. And if you're seeing my screen at all, they have a video here you can watch on the article that I found, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. But the phone is pointed at a whiteboard, for instance, and it's on an angle. It's not squared up and all straightened out for you. But what Office Lens can do is find the edges of that and take it and square it up for you so that you get a nice, clean image, or you can save it to PDF or whatever you want to do of whatever it is that you're photographing / scanning. So just making use of your camera, it crops, it enhances, it cleans up the image, and it does it really well. So check out the examples and video that they have here on the article. And I downloaded it, and actually I used it for my receipts from last week, and it worked just fine for me. So Office Lens, it's another tool from Microsoft.
I've used Office Lens a lot, off and on. I don't use it right now. I just downloaded it again. Reason I don't use it is I think the same technology is built into OneNote. So if I'm scanning receipts or whatever, I simply go into OneNote, then add a picture to the note. I do see one difference already as I just downloaded it here. They do have the business card function, which OneNote I don't think has right now. So that may be something useful. And it does if it's still the same technology, it does, like you say, a very, very nice job. Just if you want to kind of live that digital life and use the phone that or the camera that's built right into something you carry with you. Great application, and it works equally well on Android or on iOS.
Actually, they have Android, iOS, and Windows, obviously, Windows app versions as well. So we'll have links to all of that in the show notes.
Yep, very nice.
All right, shifting gears a little, we headed over to Facebook and checked out comments on the Wells Intersection group, which is a group that spawned off of our Wells Tech conference last summer, and it's headed up by Pastor James Aderman. He had a couple of links that I thought were really great for sharing with the class today. Two of them come from the Concordia Technology blog. Lots of great blog posts coming out of Concordia Technology lately. This one is titled Simple Steps to Set Your House Style and Brand. I'd never heard of the term house style, but I really like the introduction to this. It says, set a house style for my church. Brand my church like it's a soda or a pair of jeans, but we aren't selling anything. We aren't a corporation trying to make a profit. We're just here to serve. All true, but setting your church's brand and style is not about selling your services. Instead, it's about establishing a consistent sense of identity and creating quality materials. With a little planning, you can be sure that everyone on your team can easily produce materials that identifiably belong to your church, will be readable and attractive, and will be free from embarrassing inconsistencies and blunders. And I just like the way they kind of pulled it all together in a really great explanation there. They have information about choosing a set of typefaces, color palette, logos, get serious with grammar, and make an easy guide to use and find so that once you figure all this stuff out, you want to save whatever decisions you make so that it can be used into the future. So really great article there, and they have a lot of links and things for you to reference as you make some of these decisions.
Yeah, there aren't always a lot of things that a church can look to the secular world for advice on, but I think this kind of stuff does make sense because you're ministering to people who are certainly in the world and are used to seeing care taken by organizations, whether they be religious or otherwise, in how they present themselves and themes and color schemes and branding and so forth. So I think this article does a good job at that.
Yep. All right. Next up, one more from CTS. Five things to begin now in regard to social media for Advent. They have choose ideas for daily posts, and they have some great thoughts there, like photo a day challenges, daily verses, word or writing prompts, making it personal. And then they say dive deeper. Consider asking pastors and others to write up short readings that you can add to the mix during Advent. Don't forget Pinterest. Lots of people like to pin things related to Christmas. They said as early as 4 months before Christmas, people get really excited about pinning things related to Christmas and Advent. Be ready to respond, schedule your post, and remember why you're doing this. Always remember. So a few more things for you to consider as you make those preparations for the Advent and Christmas season.
Very nice.
And then finally from the Wells Intersections group, one last entry into our community feedback, and that's 8 mistakes churches make on their websites. And I kind of like these kind of lists. It's good. It's a quick read again, but easy to go through, and it might catch something that you're missing on your site. For instance, make sure you have service times and address near the top of the homepage. You might fail and give parents information about the children's ministry. So parents probably are specifically looking for that kind of thing, and make sure that you have it available. Having outdated information on the site, that might be number one for me. It says if your July 4th information is still prominently displayed, you need to fix that and get your Christmas Eve service times up there or whatever. Using poor graphics or copyrighted images, being unclear about beliefs and doctrine, making online giving difficult these days. People want to have those options available to them. And then finally, hiding your contact information. So easy, quick checks, but it might point you to something that needs to be corrected about your church website.
Very good. Is that it for community feedback?
That will do it for this month's community feedback. Lots of great stuff there.
Yeah. Very good. And thanks again to everybody who contributed. Appreciate that very, very much. Let's move on to news in tech. And I can share this one, Sally, if give you a break here. WhatsApp is in the news. And WhatsApp, in case you're not familiar, and some people in the U.S. aren't as familiar because it is more of an international market that uses this, although I know a number of people that do use it here, especially those that have international contacts. WhatsApp is basically, it was a messaging app or group chat app, but they've expanded into audio calling. And now today, or I think yesterday, they announced that you can make video calls through the WhatsApp app. And one nice thing about WhatsApp, it is totally cross-platform. So it doesn't matter whether you're on an Android phone, an iPhone, Windows phone, WhatsApp is available free, and ultimately the ability to connect with, I think they have, I think the article says over 1 billion users.
Wow.
For the app. So if you don't like the proprietary stuff based on, you know, your particular platform, speaking of Apple in particular, this might be something to consider and to give it a try. WhatsApp is company that was bought by Facebook, I believe, and looks like they've kind of left them alone and are encouraging them to kind of keep adding functionality, and the WhatsApp community now has this video calling feature built into it.
Very nice, especially the global reach of it. I think maybe, I know Facebook is big, but I know that for communications and things, WhatsApp is really huge in many
there's a whole
other
privacy
countries
thing related to it. I mean, there's a lot of reasons that you may want to consider WhatsApp. Have you ever tried it, Sally?
I'm not a WhatsApp user. No, I haven't.
I have an account. I don't have a lot of friends who are on it, so maybe that's my first problem. So any of you listeners out there who are on WhatsApp that want to connect, I'd love to learn the platform a little bit more. Sounds like it's moving in the right direction.
Definitely.
Probably some of our international listeners. I bet Mike Hartman uses WhatsApp. What do you think?
I think he does. Actually, yeah, I'm pretty sure he does.
All right. Let's move along to our Wells Now section of the program.
And we have this new thing going on in Wells. It's a little magazine that we do called Forward in Christ,
yes.
Formerly known as the Northwestern Lutheran, and maybe not quite as new as I expressed. So Forward in Christ, maybe I would characterize it as a treasure chest of great, great articles from many, many years back. And you can actually visit the Wells website and access the Forward in Christ archive at wells.net/category/Forward in Christ. We'll have a link in the show notes and read different articles and things that have been featured in the magazine online there on wells.net. And again, just
one
a treasure.
Month away, but you get all the same stuff or most of the same stuff that you get in the paper magazine as well. So one of the advantages of going here is sharing. So if you find an article that might be great to share with a neighbor or family member who needs to hear the message that you're interested in or that you're reading, good reason to go to the website.
Definitely. Good stuff there.
All right, Sally, we've reached that point in the show where you and I make a pick or tip of the week and share it with the good folks, something that has struck our fancy over the past week or something we're trying out or something that we feel is real valuable that others might want to take advantage of as well. What is your pick this week?
Well, my pick of the week has to do with the website code.org, and these are the people behind the effort called Hour of Code. Coming up December 5th through 11th, we'll be experiencing the 2016 Hour of Code, where they encourage schools and after-school programs and adults and people of all shapes and sizes to try coding for at least an hour during that week. And you can go there, you can sign up to be part of it so that you get counted and the number of hours that you create, that you do coding with your students or whatever setting, get counted in the code.org effort. And this week they had a really exciting announcement from code.org, and it has to do with the game Minecraft. So Minecraft is just really popular, and now they have a second Minecraft code.org offering. So last year they offered a basic Minecraft coding effort. This year they have something called Minecraft Design, where you can actually design your own Minecraft world. And they walk you through step by step. There's some video tutorials and challenges for you to do things. The one that I have up on my screen right now is interacting with the sheep. So you're supposed to walk over to the sheep and program it to drop something. And normally sheeps drop wool. If you touch a sheep or whatever, they give you some wool as if you've sheared the sheep. And so if I make it drop wool, when I press run, I can guide my person over to the sheep and press the space bar, and the sheep will give me some wool. And he looks like he's been, sheared. He loses his white coating. I'm going to go back to that, though. And this time, instead of having the sheep drop wool, I can control it, and I can make my sheep drop diamonds, which are super valuable commodity in the Minecraft space. So this is where the fun comes in, and that those who are learning to code have a lot more power. And when I tap the sheep, he gives me a diamond instead of that plain old wool that I'm used to him giving me. So It progresses. You can do lots of other things. There's sounds that you can control, so you can make the sheep moo like a cow or sizzle like a creeper that normally has certain sounds in the games and things. So I could see kids getting really excited about being able to control things in Minecraft that they normally don't have any control over. So make your chickens lay diamonds or whatever you want to do. This is a really fun, interactive, step-by-step way to introduce students to coding. And if all you do is use this Minecraft designer for an hour with your students, I think they will have a really great understanding. They've got loops. They've got forever loops. I've made it through maybe seven of the levels, and I haven't done everything, obviously, yet, but they just kind of step-by-step introduce you to different coding techniques and allow you to control your own Minecraft world. So I think this will be really popular in this year's Hour of Code efforts.
What grade level would you suggest here, Sally?
They need to be able to read the thing. So I'd say third grade on up would be just fine with this. And mm-hmm. adults could have fun with it too. So check it out.
Very nice. Nice pick. Mm-hmm. My pick of the week is from Google. And they have released an app both for iOS and Android. So in the App Store and the Google Play Store, called PhotoScan. Photos from the past meet scanner from the future. I don't know about you, Sally, but I'm of such an age where I still have a lot of printed photos from childhood all the way through adulthood. I don't take printed photos anymore. I just, you know, send them to Walgreens or whatever to have the ones that I want printed. But I've got drawers full of photos. And back when my kids were still at home, that was one of the ways they earned a nickel or two, is using our home scanner and taking these photos to digitize them. And they were very excited about it to begin with, and then they realized how much work that was. And so I still have a ton of photos that are not digitized. But that's where this app comes in, PhotoScan. One of the challenges that you have with using a camera to take like a picture of your photos is lighting. There's always a glare or something. And that's what this app does. It kind of overcomes the lighting conditions and some of the challenges, and the camera on it as a way to scan these photos in. It's an initial picture of the image, so it finds the edges and some of the things that might be going wrong with the image. So if there's a little curl to the photo, you might get a little glare from a light source. So what they do is they have you take an initial photo, and then on screen there are four dots that appear on the four areas, you know, four corners or four quadrants of the photo: upper left, right, bottom left, bottom right. And they guide you through, kind of like taking a landscape picture. So the software itself guides you through taking pictures. I can play the demonstration here. So you take the picture, and then it shows you four dots that it wants you to also take pictures of. So you kind of center your camera on the dots. Then it stitches everything together and puts it in Google Photos. So if you're a Google Photos user, this is a really handy way to get those old pictures when you had the mullet and the
big hair,
styled hair, whatever it was, that cheesy mustache, into Google Photos. And does a pretty good job. I say they have maybe a little bit of work to go. I saw some artifacts when I was trying it on some really old photos, but it'll find the edges, so it'll crop it appropriately regardless of kind of how square your camera is or your camera phone is, and then stitches them together, gets rid of the glare because you're looking at the photo from different angles, so it's putting together the best ones, and then it does a nice job at stitching that all together and then giving you the ability to add some other filters if you want, and then finally uploading it into Google Photos. So it kind of decreases the friction that exists there for getting some of your memories that are stuffed away in some shoebox or drawer online, where you can actually share them and enjoy them. And I'm finding pictures that I didn't know were there, and having fun sharing them with family members as well. So mm-hmm. that's PhotoScan. Just do a search for it in the App Store of your choice. And I hit the wrong button here.
There you are.
And give it a shot.
Okay, so first of all, I'm glad you slid that slider across, because I actually took my mouse and tried to do it while I was watching your screen. You're on a part of the page where there was a slider. So sometimes I get lost in video and reality and things like that.
Cool.
Second of all, I have a story to tell about scanning photos. It was probably about late 90s that my mom decided she was going to give us her collection, her lifetime collection of photos, and divvy it up among all us kids and things like that. And I took my set and I literally sat at a scanner and scanned hundreds of photos and cropped them all and saved them all. And I ended up printing albums with all the best photos for everyone. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like they had the the printed photo, but they had a copy of it in a scrapbook kind of style or whatever. So I'm really proud of myself. I, you know, spent all this time. I grouped them by who was in the pictures and did all this stuff manually. And I look back at those photos now, and it makes me really sad because when I scanned them back in the late 90s, they're like, I don't know, maybe the biggest ones are 200 pixels by 200 pixels. I mean, they're very low res. And so the idea of being able to go back and do that with my phone in such an easy way would actually inspire me to actually get those digitized in a much higher res format and stuff. Yeah. So great
find. The beauty of this is, it takes a good picture or stitches together a good picture regardless of lighting, but getting it into your system, that's the bummer about, you know, kind of the physical scanner is you got to scan it in, then you got to crop it, and then you got to give it a name and put it in a folder. This just makes, I don't know if it's going to save a ton of time, but it seems to me like it would be a lot easier exercise to go ahead and do it this way rather than kind of sit right at that scanner all the time.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, we're a good month and a half away from the best of 2016, but I'll predict that Google Photos makes it on my list for this year because they got some awesome tools, really great, great suite of tools.
We'll keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
All right, so those are our picks of the week. Let's move on to ministry resources, those things that we've come across that we wanted to share that might be helpful in your either professional or personal ministries. What do we have this week?
Well, this week we're going to talk about a new youth ministry resource that's available, and you can read more about it over on the wells.net website. I'm just trying to share my screen so it's up for those that are watching the video version of our show. It's called Transformed, Equipping Youth Leaders. So this is actually not written as like youth Bible studies or anything like that. This is for your ministry leaders. And it centers around a series of videos that you'll get access to when you buy the resource through NPH. And one of the people that's kind of got a lead role in this is Pastor John Enter, who's from Hope in West Palm Beach, Florida. And he's actually the youth coordinator for the South Atlantic District. And he says in the article that it boils down to the spiritual aspect of our kids. If they continue to grow in their faith and they have ownership in our churches, they're still engaged. And so the videos, which include topics like Christian mentoring, games and activities, youth-driven Bible studies, faith experiences, they focus on helping youth create more meaningful relationships with each other, with their churches, and with God's Word. And he says, he goes on to say, we've done a great job of training our kids in school and in confirmation class. They have a very informed faith, but they struggle with sharing it and using it. So instead of just Instead of just a cerebral thing, we want this to be a heart and soul thing. Connect with kids in their DNA of their local churches. Get them actively serving. And you know, this really hits with our congregation, St. Paul's in New Ulm. We have a youth task force right now addressing these very issues. And so I think there are many congregations that are facing these kind of challenges with the youth leaving the church after confirmation, not feeling connected or engaged. And this series of 8 videos, along with Bible studies and other resources for your youth ministry team, may be a really great way to turn that corner and kind of begin to connect the students, the youth, to our churches and to active service.
Very good. And that is a nice segue into our featured video, because one of the videos that is shared on that site is the video of John Enter talking about this at the last summer's youth rally. So the Transformed concept is discussed there in the workshop there on the Vimeo feed that they produced. So take a look at that if you're more interested in, more information that kind of tells you all about it and the opportunity that it might present a nice ministry approach for your congregation, especially if you're trying to figure out or jumpstart your youth ministry.
Yep. Looking forward to exploring that further, for sure. Also looking forward to next week.
What are we doing?
We have an interview with a celebrity next week. We are going to have Pastor Andrew Scheer, who is behind the 364 Days of Thanksgiving book, website, all kinds of great resources. I think we even talked about his Twitter feed last week on our Twitter for Ministry. So Pastor Scheer started this concept. He has written and done work in his local community to share the concept of 364 Days of Thanksgiving, being thankful to God all year round, regardless of the circumstances. And he's going to come on and talk to us about how all that happened for sharing that information, and how the blog and other things took off the way it did, and also maybe some focus on ways to be thankful for technology. It's all part of our Thanksgiving week episode next week.
Yep, so tune in. We will be back on, I think, on our regular schedule, so the show should be out sometime on Wednesday, just in time for the holidays. So
there you go.
I want to thank everybody for joining us once again. We truly appreciate your listening ears or watching eyes or both, and we try and bring you good stuff each and every week. And if we miss something, or you found some good stuff that we're not aware of, or you don't think we've talked about, or even if we have talked about it, share it with us. That's what community feedback is all about, is kind of this team, Wells Tech, where you can contribute and everybody else can benefit. So thanks again for tuning in, and have a blessed week, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.